Podcast, brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, B&B celebrates its 9,000th episode. Bo and Hope come face to fancy face on Days. There's Sprina Sexus Interruptus on GH, and Phyllis's scheme goes sideways on Y&R. Stay tuned. Bo, welcome.
Hello.
Joshua Baldwin, welcome.
Hello.
Joshua Baldwin, B&B celebrated its 9,000th episode. Did you see any improvement versus last week?
No, it's terrible.
So this is how you celebrate 9,000 episodes.
It was about Steffi's birthday, and there wasn't any mention of Phoebe, her twin, who has the same birthday.
Preach. They act like Phoebe never existed.
Yes, it's like she never existed. Now, Jacqueline McGinnis Woods is fine. Most of the time, Tanner Novlin's just sitting there, which is better. And so it's all fine and good, but it just seemed very underwhelming. There's a lot, I guess, that you could do, and I'm not sure why. I don't begrudge Jacqueline McGinnis Woods for getting a solo episode. It just felt like a weird 9,000 when Catherine Kelly Lang has been on half of those 9,000 shows. I don't know. It was underwhelming. Steffi's birthday. Hooray. I don't know.
Jillian, what did you think of the celebration? And let's just take a moment. Do either of you, or I'll start with Jillian on this, but do you guys have a favorite B&B moment?
Okay, so we can circle back to that because you asked me what I thought. So you ain't going to Debo that.
No, it's a two-parter for you.
Yeah, we go circle back. So when I think of a 9,000th episode of a show, a soap opera in particular, I think of it encompassing what makes The Bold and the Beautiful the most watched soap opera in the world. The business storylines, the romance, the rivalries, you know. The shameless plugs of the hunks, the women, gorgeous women, and so on. And this just was not it. For those who aren't familiar with this show, it should have been a guide and a love letter to the fans, showing why it has gotten to, why it's made it to the point of 9,000 episodes and hopefully and beyond. It's showing you why it's made it thus far and why we're going to continue doing so. And instead, it was more of a love letter to the character of Steffi and Jacqueline McGinnis Wood. Like, this is not a shade to Jacqueline. Jacqueline is just doing what they tell her to do, what's on the paper. She wasn't like, I want a solo episode now. No, this wasn't before, because you know some people just cannot differentiate between character and actor. So I hate that I have to do this stipulation and this little disclaimer. This was, you know, this is not a dig against her, but it's like what you said, Josh. Catherine Kelly Lang was on there for the bulk of those 9,000 episodes. John McCook was on there for the bulk of those 9,000 episodes. And it was all about Steffi's birthday. And you don't even bring up Phoebe. They act like Phoebe didn't even exist. It's just Thomas and Steffi. Steffi and Thomas. And then they throw RJ in there. Like the new RJ, which we should talk about that. But this really should have been for those who aren't familiar with Bold or the classic episodes and why it makes it Bold and the Beautiful. This really wasn't it. Like, I really wish they had showed some of those episodes, show how their young adult characters, why we clamor for them to bring them back and to show them as older adults now and why they should be the next generation and so on. Like, we don't see any of that. We didn't see why Usher was like, I want to be on this show, and Usher and Amber and Rick, we didn't see none of that.
Why Tamar Braxton named her child
Logan. Tamar to the Braxton named her child Logan because her ex-husband now is a huge Bold and the Beautiful fan. We didn't see any of that. It's like, I don't understand why these shows are afraid of history. They should have showed their history. And yes, you're going to have to show people who aren't there anymore and whose roles have been recast. Like, when Ron did this, I used to get a chuckle out of it. And some of the other writers would do it too. When Cassie DePaiva slipped into the role of Blair, and when they would do any type of throwbacks, they would have Cassie say, yeah, it was a little bit different back then. You know, they could have had Torsten and Krista do the same thing. They could have had Hope do the same thing. I don't understand it. You have a catalog of fabulous episodes that you could have cut and sliced and give to the fans as a love letter. And it was about Steffi's birthday, Ridge being salty that she's not spending time with her dad, that she wants to get her back cracked by her fine ass husband. And I was really let down by this. This was not a good look. I'm sorry.
Well, and what's interesting about that is that, like, say, unlike General Hospital, where you can be like, oh, there's all kinds of regimes and they're forgetting history, this regime has sort of been there.
What are you talking about?
Well, like, Brad has been on the writing team in some form and executive producing for a very long time. It's not like it's a newer writing team who's forgetting recent history or even long-term history. He's been there for most of it. So, Jillian, what is your favorite moment from B&B history?
You cannot not talk about Sally. Sally and her ragtag team, that when they always used to jack Forster Creation Designs. I remember one episode, I just saw it too, where Sally dressed up as a man and went, they were having those showings and the gowns, beautiful gowns under lock and key. And Sally dressed up as a man, faked her way in there, and was about to steal some of those things. And Stephanie caught that ass when she was in there. She was like, girl. And Thorne was with Macy, and she was just like, this is why you cannot marry into this family, boy. I loved when Sally used to do some of her crazy things. Like, it's just I can't stick with one. Like, well, I did mention when they used to have people from like the music world come in and do a story arc. When Usher came in and he played Raymond, wink wink nudge nudge, and was Amber's man, and she got knocked up and she didn't know if it was Rick's or if it was Raymond. She didn't know if she was going to have a Forrester heir or she was going to have a biracial baby, and she ran out to Death Valley to have that kid because she could not have her cover blown. That was good stuff. This week they had Lil Nas X on, and it was, I don't even understand what was the point of,
what was that? I don't understand.
James Corden, what was his point? Like, what was your point? You're leaving CBS, so why the fuck is he on there? You're not hot anymore. You're like, why? Why are you on there? Why are you on there? Like, I thought it was just stupid. They didn't even promote it well. Like, Lil Nas X, as hot as he is, he just did like a drive-by. That was just a bust. What was the point of that? I thought they were going to interact with the characters more. It used to be more intricate. Now it's just like, y'all are hoping that y'all go viral.
Josh, what's your favorite B&B memory?
So in terms of the number of years it's been on, I am more of a newer viewer the last 12, 15 years. So I'm glad you brought up Sally, because mine is more recent, which is Nicole and Maya, and Nicole that Friday calling Maya Myron. And they didn't follow up with it, but that was a truly shocking moment.
What you mean they didn't follow up with it? Yes, they did.
I mean, they followed up with it, but they let that story die off after a year.
Oh,
going on right now.
Yeah, be clear, because I'm like, they did. They show enough did.
No, they did, because in that year, I will say it forever. One of my favorite soap operas in soap history is the unnamed All My Avons. I loved when all the Avons were on. I loved that whole storyline. It is one of, to me, the best creations of a new family.
Shout out to Patrick Mulcahy for that.
And grossest misuses of actors eventually. But when they brought him on, that story was just fire.
See? And it's sad. that you said you're a newer viewer from the past 10, 15 years, like, right? If you had seen some of the history of, like, Little Deacon and how Deacon was a badass, how Deacon was on the phone having sex with Bridget and let Eric and Ridge and all of them, quiet as kept, y'all are perverts, because I would have hung up that phone and ran over there and beat your ass. He let them hear him deflowering Bridget. That's, see, you're a newer viewer. You don't get that history with Deacon.
No.
Deacon and that little D, you don't get the history of that push and pull with him and Brooke and how Hope came about. We should have seen that.
Honestly, when they did that on Young and the Restless, when Deacon had Amber get Daniel on the phone, I thought that was new. I thought it was original. I didn't think that was
a throwback.
I had no idea. Yep. That's how little they never talk about it.
Nope.
My favorite B&B moment was Stephanie, the ballbuster Forrester, kneeing Eric. Jillian, what did you think of the new RJ?
That episode was a little cheese-tastic, too. Like, I get that you have to do quirky Charlie, but him, there's somebody saying that they're Ridge Forrester here. I thought that was just, what is this? And I'm like, oh, he's Ridge Forrester. It was whack. That young man, as we all do on Daytime Confidential, he gets the 30-day clock. The clock started Friday. Again, poorly executed, in my opinion. I don't know about you guys, but all of a sudden, Brooke is all, I miss him. I'm like, today you miss him and he pops up? We don't hear nothing about RJ for like how long? And then all of a sudden, I just don't understand what they're doing over there. Like,
well,
they just,
at General Hospital, they're saving someone from being hunted in real life. So, I mean,
what are you talking about?
Ethan.
They're reintroducing
a character by having him being put up for bid.
At least he's fitting into a storyline they're doing.
Right. Bull just shoehorned this kid in, and I'm back and I'm an influencer and I want to be back in the family business. It's like, I don't know what they're doing. And then, you know, well, if we do have a final thought, I'll talk about my final thought about this whole Carter, Bill, Katie thing.
Real quick, RJ, he was on for a day. He was very cheesy. The Joshua Hoffman is the new actor. He was on Shameless. He looks very much like Anthony Turpel. So there's a consistency there with the look.
Yeah.
One thing I did like, Jillian brought it up, is that they brought him in as an influencer that is very current. That is very much what an RJ Forrester.
I'll give him credit for that. Yeah.
Very excited by that. I don't know why we needed that ridiculousness around RJ and Charlie and all that kind of stuff.
Charlie don't know what that man's son looks like. He don't have a picture on his desk. His mama don't.
Because to echo Jillian, they ain't mentioned RJ since he left. I mean, we had known. You'd have thought. I mean, folks have gotten married. Children have happened. People have died. Ain't nobody talked to or called RJ.
Like, the buildup for RJ just was, the execution was poor. Like, it should have been a little bit of a build up, and it just didn't happen.
And if they're going to play Thomas versus RJ, Thomas should have been involved. They should have start the tension now. Do something. Right. Yeah. Like, maybe RJ is behind a blog that has gone after Thomas and his design. I don't know. Just something.
Right. Build up the tension. Build up that there's going to be a potential rivalry.
Should have brought him in working for Ion Fashion. Have him over.
Ooh, right?
Oh, that would have been interesting. Good.
Speaking of tension, how is the tension holding up for you on The Young and the Restless, Josh, with Diane, Phyllis, and company?
Well, there is no tension because they done killed Jeremy Stark off.
Another
off screen.
Actor.
I mean, they went into that bathroom. We did nothing. Okay. So there's no tension because we know everything. And all we're doing is watching the people of Genoa City act a fool, knowing that when Phyllis comes back, everybody's been up in arms and going after Diane. And Diane she has to be vindicated because this is just, it would be good on screen if we just didn't know all this stuff. Like, I know she's alive. I know that Diane is being unjustly held in prison. I know that Summer has going to have egg all over her face because we're going to Diane and saying, you will miss everything.
No, that does not happen. Spoiler alert. She meets up with her, depending on when this goes up. Spoiler alert. She meets up with her mama, Phyllis. They all meet up in Chancellor Park, boy. When you're hiding out, you just go and meet up with somebody in Chancellor fucking.
Oh, Lord.
She texts, Phyllis texts Summer. Summer doesn't know who it is. She meets up in the park and she's like, oh my God, all is forgiven. And Summer understands why her mom did what she did.
Well, then I don't get it. I don't understand.
None of this makes any sense. We don't even know that this man was so fucking scary and treacherous.
And Summer and Kyle cannot survive this. If Summer does this, sides with her mother and lets Diane stay in prison, Summer and Kyle have to divorce.
Well, first and foremost, we know Diane ain't going to stay in prison, so that's not going to happen. But Summer married him, and what are you talking about? They ain't going to survive. Summer married that boy and is still in that family after Diane let her big mama think that she iced her.
Hear you. I know, but they don't play that. I agree with you. They don't play any of those beats.
Mm-mm. So the storyline is a wash. Like, what was the point? You wasted Jane.
It's not
Jane
even
Hyde.
A wash. It's dirty water.
Yeah, get it done. Move it along.
It's just like, it ain't even foam up. It ain't even make water. Like, what was the you brought James Hyde on to do what? Prop up Diane and Jack?
And he died off screen.
But is it even really propping up Jack and Diane? Or is it trying to actually finally give Phyllis something to do? Because I feel like Diane has actually had storyline motivations for the most part since her return, whereas Phyllis has been floundering for years. And like, this is like, okay, we're going to give Phyllis something to do other than Nick. So this is the storyline that they put together for Phyllis and used the rivalry with Diane.
You know what's so stupid? And like, they had something right there and they don't want to play upon it. When Phyllis and Tucker were circling each other, they could have had those two work together. What if, Devon should have gotten Tucker a McCall Unlimited, Phyllis should have stayed with the company. And instead of them firing her from whatever fucking thing that Daniel was doing, she goes over to McCall Unlimited with Tucker. And they snark at each other and they just build up on that tension. And Ashley becomes a little shooketh. But while they're building up on that tension, she finds out from Tucker what the hell Diane was doing there. That could have, you could have utilized that. But they didn't. It's like, and I just feel as though they're going to waste Trevor St. John, too. I feel it in my spirit.
Oh, it's happening already.
I'm like, God, if y'all brought this man on to do nothing again, then obviously Sony needs to look at Josh. He is the only one over there. You are the old. You cannot blame this one and that one now. You the only one, Joe, that is running things over there. You are the butcher, the breaker, the baker, and the candlestick maker. You cannot blame anybody else. And then you have to really take a step back and say, you know what? He has to go because you've wasted Robert Newman. You wasted James Hyde and you are wasting Trevor St. John. And you cannot say it's an acting thing because they are making shit into sugar right now, and you can't put that on Trevor St. John. I'll be damned if you do that.
I don't think Josh knows. Maybe I'm wrong, but it very much seems like Josh doesn't know what. Maybe the audience's definition of a villain is different from what Josh's definition of a villain is. Clearly, I feel like that we're expecting something he's not giving us because there's different definitions.
But the thing about it is is it even a villain? Like, if you go back and look at what we've had with Victoria's husband who died outside a window or whatever the fuck it was, and then we have this, and then you go back even further, like
Ashland.
Yes, like there's no, we're going to plot a storyline from beginning to finish. We are going to have clear character motivations. We are going to have this villain either be trapped in a corner, and then this is how we're going to get them out. They start a storyline.
They don't have an outline. You can tell they don't have a story bible or an outline. Nothing.
Right.
And it's how they just came up with one.
They start a storyline by introducing a character. They tell us he's a bad person, or they give us the impression that he's a bad person, so that we'll be on our like toes to see whether or not he's actually a bad person. They get 3 months into the storyline of us supposedly believing he's a bad storyline, and then it wilts.
Bad person.
It wilts.
Like they had enough time to flesh out.
Yes.
What Diane was up to, who she was with, and what the hell they were doing. When Tucker came back and was like, "Yo, she was with Jeremy Stark." Who's Jeremy Stark? Even if you didn't go back and play the hits and had, if you could not film fucking flashbacks, you know, you could have had Tucker sit down and talk about his misdeeds. And then they go to Diane, and then you have Diane talking about it too. And then you film a little thing, or you do a voiceover of hearing them doing little scheme. They didn't do any, like, you had enough time to flesh it out, and it was not done. And I see the same place. They're going down that street with Tucker because Tucker came on all gangbusters, and all he is doing is crying up under Ashley's damn skirt. And I want to be with my son, but I want to have a relationship with my son. You're not doing anything. Like, what is the purpose of Audra being a mole there? You broke. According to what Josh keeps saying, you broke. Tucker ain't got no money. You broke.
And suddenly Diane has all this money. Where did that come from?
Like, what is going on here? Like, Audra is supposed to be a mole. What is she doing besides getting hot and bothered that Nate is getting some from the boss? Like, it's just
she,
not
she has
working.
A voyeuristic streak.
So, well, say that then. Say it.
They can't seem to have a multi-layered character. And now I'm going to bring up Another World. Reginald Love was a big bad on Another World. He was evil. I was scared of him when I watched it, but I also at the same time could be scared of him and believe he loved Mary McKinnon and that she was his kryptonite because he loved her so much, and believe he fiercely loved his granddaughter Victoria. That's a nuanced character. Stefano DeMera was a nuanced character. Carl Hutchins was a nuanced character. Jeremy Stark and Tucker McCall could be nuanced characters, but they had Tucker come on scary, but then they made him with Ashley, and now he can't be both at the same time. There should be multi layers.
Like, this is it's just a bust. This was just a waste of time and resources. This was a bust. I hope that Josh, aka Joe, no, fuck that, Joe. I hope that Joe takes the time and says, you know what? Let's flesh out Tucker McCall some more. Like, okay, McCall Unlimited is broke, but he has an ace up his sleeve. Like, something.
How is he gonna have time to do any fleshing out of anything when he is the only person there?
Child, I don't know. He was the one who decided to get rid of them writers, so he know everything, Luke. Luke, what's wrong with you? That man knows everything. Shame on you for questioning that. What's wrong with you?
One little bright spot on The Young and the Restless, at least for me, is Daniel and Lily. What did you guys think of
that? Oh, yeah.
That?
Yes.
That chemistry is still there. Like strike twice, baby. I love
20 years or 15 years, how many ever years later, they still have it. They still have it. And it's like
it.
Lily and Daniel. I can't believe I'm about to say this, but it's like, Lily and Daniel are sort of like comfort food the same way Nikki and Victor are.
Bitch, now you just jumped out the fucking window with that. I'm like, whoo.
Well, but think about it. City where so many of the young adult cast is recast or newly introduced or whatever the case may be, like, how many women have we cycled through in Kyle's life? How many different Phyllises, or not Phyllises, Summers have we dealt with over the past few years? Like, there's just something
one.
Comforting.
No, we just had one. What you talking?
Well, we've had two Summers.
We have two now, yes, but
I'm just saying,
what you talking?
All I'm saying is, Daniel has been consistently Daniel. Lily has been consistently Lily since now they're back together, and it just feels like you're coming home in a sense for me.
Okay. Yes, I get it's comfort food. Yes, Victor and Nikki status. No. So,
the question for the podcast: are Daniel and Lily the next Nikki and Victor? No, that's a joke.
Tell @Luke_Kerr, K as in kite. E-R-R. Y'all go after him over there with that bullshit.
Well, Jillian, this last week, Spencer and Trina were sexist interruptus on the ship. What did you think?
I thought it was hot, but I'm not going to lie. A part of me was like, I don't want my babies to have their first time on that rust bucket tugboat. That thing is like 40 plus years old. I'm like, you know, y'all rock it good. Y'all may sink. I'm like, no, I don't want them on there. And the latches on the outside. No, I want it to be somewhere else. Preferably which Trina has like a 10,000 thread count, Egyptian thread count. I'm like, that's gross. I'm like, that thing, yuck. Oh, but it was so sweet. And Spencer is just being such, like, he is in love with that girl. Like, he wants her first time to be perfect, but he's also, you know, he's a man still. Like, he was like, are you sure? But he's all like, all right, let's do this. So it was cute. Ugh. And then here comes Victor docking dry, you know, when they're like, we're docked. I'm like, God damn it, Victor. But again, I did not want their first time on that tugboat. I'm sorry. I want it somewhere else.
That gives a whole new meaning to the word tug. Josh, what did you think of Spencer and Trina?
Well, first and foremost, the whole adventure has been good for Spencer and Trina. I thought for once, General Hospital put out a promo this last week that worked. Yes. And it was all about Spencer and Trina. And suddenly it was like, yes, okay, PR team, you're in the game. Let's go. And then we get we had good Spencer and Trina stuff all week long, but then we get the Liesl stuff. And I was just in. Liesl, growth.
The evolution. We were watching the evolution of Liesl Obrecht because years ago, you know, I could, under Ron, I have to call a spade here. Under Ron, Liesl was mustache twirling, cold. She was a little cartoonish. Well, no, hella cartoonish. She was just like a robot that was obsessed with Faison. Under Chris, now I have to break it down because, you know, Dan was there, but he was not the head writer at the time. But under Chris, he fleshed Liesl Obrecht out. And under them both now, she's more viable. We have like a family. She has more of a heart, but she will get you told. Like when she told Austin.
Quite quick.
Hmm? Yeah, like when she told.
Quite quickly.
Yeah.
I sort of wish that she would take it to Carly.
Me fucking too. Like I am. I don't understand. Yeah. See, this is what pisses me off with these two. Dan and Chris and Dan. She needs to go off on Carly about how she's done Nina, and she needs to fucking put the fear of God in both Carly and Joss. When she finds out my Britta saved you, you left her to die by herself, and then you went to go hunch. Oh, okay. Like, I need that to happen. Like, agreed. You see, like, the evolution, like I was saying, the evolution under these two, when the old Obrecht would have been like, dust him over. Victor, dust him over. She was like, no, I need them as lab rats. And I was just like, oh. At first, I was like, bitch, are you talking about lab rat? But I was like, okay, Jillian, she's trying to save him. I'm like, okay, I'll let that pass. And I'm just like, that's the evolution and growth in her. And like I was saying with Austin, when Austin dry snitched and caused the deconstruction of Lou Bailey or Bailey Lou, she rolled up on him and said, let me tell you something. And it's Peter's child. You know Liesl is petty, but she considers that child, her family. She told that fool, if anything happens to Maxie because of your pettiness, you gonna answer to me. And Britt just looked at him like, bitch, you on your own. I can't help you with that. You don't mess with the wrong one.
First and foremost, I forgot Bailey Lou existed, to be straight up, because they ain't played Bailey Lou on screen since God was a child.
Yeah.
But just continuing on, you are absolutely right. This evolution of Liesl Ulbricht, I mean, under Ron, she liked Howarth, help me, Frizz, Elizabeth
Franco.
She loved the serial killer
with the tumor.
Yes, but. Yes! But they worst ones that could come back. Franco and Liesl were kind of this gold island, this oasis. Yeah. I loved it. But under Chris, we'll say, because as what Jillian was saying, she's become more multifaceted.
Yes.
There's more growth. She's still going to go after folks. And I agree. She should go after Carly because they did have that scene with Liesl and Nina looking at that gigantic overgrown baby that Willow gave birth to. And there was that moment they had where she was like, we're going to get Carly. And then we ain't got Carly.
She needs to get her. Like,
she needs to get Carly.
Carly needs to get, like, Liesl needs to get her pound of flesh. Joss, I don't understand it with these two. I don't get why Joss is like untouchable. She needs to get her comeuppance. Like Spencer needs to find out you left Britt to die so that you can cheat on Cam once again and get penis. Like you need to be punished. Like,
well, and Trina still doesn't really know what Jocelyn did to Cameron. And that we need to hear. We need to see play out.
That all needs to play out, and Carly needs to get, like, Liesl needs to get her lick back on Carly.
And, okay, so just to go to Spencer and Trina for a second, that moment when Trina's lying down and Spencer is leaning over her and they're having that in-depth conversation, and I was just like, this is it. This is what I want. These are the babies doing what the babies need to do.
And
playing this long. It's amazing. It was so good.
Because you hot in the ass. You probably was hunching when you were two. You fresh. You just fresh. I just want my babies to hunch somewhere. Like,
oh, I'm with you. Not on that rust bucket.
No!
Right.
No.
They need a proper bed and a proper some candles and some stuff.
Yes, I'm saying.
Ava would never forgive Spencer if he hunched her for the first time on that rust bucket.
Oh, I think Liesl will probably use him as a pincushion.
Yep.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, so just to expand it just a moment, what do you think about Portia going full? I don't mind Portia being anti-Spencer if they make her all the way anti-Spencer.
But Mama, you ain't in the position to judge that boy. So Miss Mama, right, she needs to settle down. Trina's an adult. Trina, Spencer did not tell her to come with him. Trina did that on her own. She needs to stop putting. She needs to stop blaming people. She needs to just face the fact that Spencer is her daughter's man. You just need to deal with it, sis, because you're going to push her away. And I'm still mad that they have not brought up Taggart. Now, see, Chris and Dan and Chris, I don't know which one of you is behind it, but I'm going to have to see until one of you snitch on each other on the other. I'm going to have to dog you both out.
Even if he's busy. A little drive-by mention. A mention.
Taggart's in Marrakesh or something. Boom. We can't get a hold of him. He's under. Fine. You don't bring him at all. It's all about Curtis. I love Trina, too. And I got to go.
Curtis calling that baby his daughter. Stop that.
I'm like, shut up. I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
I don't like it either. But I agree with you both about Portia and the hypocrisy, but daytime is filled with adults who are all hypocritical about their own business and trying to put it on their children. So if they go in, if they really take it all the way to glory, I'm okay with it because then at least they're committing to something. But I agree with you. It doesn't sit right with me after Portia been lying up and down one side and the other about everything.
Mm. Yeah, no.
Friend of the pod, Jay Bernard, he did a PowerPoint presentation on Twitter about everything that was that Victor was doing. And I'm like, sure, like you could. So his PowerPoint was in reaction to my being like, global warming is our big bad villain that Victor's been working with. I still maintain, regardless of whether or not this is popular with billionaires, whether or not it's a thing, like the revelation for me has fallen flat. And I'm like, after every, the Charles Shaughnessy is so good at making devilish things interesting that I was expecting something more than global warming. I can go to any movie theater at any time and watch something about global warming. I was expecting some other big bad threat at, other than global warming.
But see, this is where you need to break. This is not a slight at you. This is just bare facts. This is why. How long we've been doing this? I don't have no gray hair yet. Oh, thank you, Jesus. And no, I don't use dark and lovely or none of them bitches. I don't have them yet. But this is why the figurative gray hairs come out and we are like, ah! Because we say to you, you need to bone up on history. This is in the Cassadines wheelhouse.
I'm not saying
anything. No, let me finish. This is why it wasn't like a shocker for people, because this has been this is what put the Cassadines on the map.
I am not denying any of that. I am not denying any of that.
You have Victor. I was going to say you have Victor. You got hints of what he was doing. You weren't too sure because he was so coy. Like Victor, Charles Shaughnessy plays it so effortlessly. He's always that cat that ate the canary. He just has that smirk, and he just uses these innuendos and double entendres, and you're just like, what the hell are you talking about over there? Like, this is in the cast. This is the Cassadines history. You've always wrote about the Cassadines history. This is what they do. They all about the global warming and shit.
There is no denying anything that you just said or any of the points that Jay Bernard made. I am simply stating that for me, Charles Shaughnessy as a villain and the way he described the threat, I was expecting us to be able to actually get a character that scared the Cassadines, and I was looking forward to the possible future, like years and years of future storylines of there actually being a big bad who scared the Cassadines, because very little ever scares the Cassadines. And I think that when you have these invincible characters, that putting the fear of God into them by introducing someone else as a threat who has a visible face who is actually scaring them has potential. So that's where I like the Charles Shaughnessy is so brilliant that that's where I was thinking, okay, we're actually going to get a real threat manifested in the form of a new character, and it's going to drive storyline for years.
Well, we don't. This isn't a new character.
This isn't
a new character, and like I said, history. Victor wasn't a bad Cassadine. Victor was a good Cassadine.
Right.
I don't know what Ron saw. Ron just decided I'm gonna make him a ham and bad. A bad ham sandwich when he got a hold of. Yes, I'm sorry, I have to call you out because Tao was a ham. And Tao originated that role. That's what makes it sad. Tao made him a ham. And I guess under this new regime, they're like, we're going to split the difference. We're going to make him kind of charming because Ava is just like, he don't scare me. And Laura's like, girl, you cannot trust him. Like, they split the difference. I never got that Victor was supposed to be a big scary. Like, that was always supposed to be Valentine. And we could go down that road again, but I don't feel like it. That was supposed to be Valentine. They just didn't do it. Victor is that Cassadine that you think that you could be cool with, but don't leave your pocketbook with him. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I'm sitting at the bar with Victor, I'm not leaving my purse with him. You get what I'm saying? He look cool enough to do it with, but if I go to the ladies room, I'm taking my purse with me. You get what I'm saying? Like, GH has never given me that distinction that Victor was supposed to be that big baddie. Now, I was hoping they would have said Victor was working with another big baddie, Cassadine. They still could possibly do it. They say that the Cassadine, that other island in Venezuela, that's their hideout. Maybe Miko, maybe they have some more Cassadines that we don't know about. I got to go look at their family tree. Who knows? But I've never gotten that Victor was supposed to be the scary one.
Well, I never, like, all I'm saying is for this storyline, I was, how do I put it?
There's, you just wanted something more than global warming,
right? Yeah. I wanted something more than global warming. Okay. But like, if you think about all the European dynasties and how some of them fell, why could there have been a new Rasputin? Why couldn't Victor have been afraid of whoever this Rasputin character is? Like that, I figured.
You wanted Victor to be scared of someone.
They have, on many occasions, they've had Victor talk about how, like, things were about to get really bad and scary. And granted, you can totally frame that in global warming if you want to frame it as global warming. I just was hoping for something that was not global warming.
But to be fair with them, before we transition, he's never hinted that there was some other person. Like, if they had done that and then we got global warming, I'd back you 100%. But to be fair, they've never given us any indication that Victor was talking about a person.
They didn't say it explicitly. No, they never did. That was just the impression I got from watching it.
He's kept saying there's something coming. There's something coming. It's going to be horrible.
But
not a person, just something.
Well, yeah. Something coming that none of us really thought we needed. The return of Ethan. Can I add $1 million to the total so that Tracy can put a bullet through that character's head? Why can't this character be a side note of or a footnote of General Hospital history? He should be the unabortion equivalent for General Hospital. Just don't bring it up. It never happened. It never happened. I do not get why we are wasting so much fucking time on bringing back Ethan. Tracy fucking Quartermain. All the shit that's going on General Hospital with Mildew, with Brooklyn, with Ned, the crisis at the Quartermains, Brooklyn's been reeling. Where the fuck is Tracy? And instead, we have her walking in to a room and saving fucking Ethan. Why can't they put a bullet through that character's head?
Okay. Now go sit down. I got you right here. Just sit down. See, now I thought I agreed with you with that. When they had Tracy come on with that brim hat and all white, I was like, this was a missed mark with Ned talking about the shit going on with ELQ. They should have had an ELQ board meeting, and Drew and Michael should have been teaming up, and they should have been trying to ouster Valentine. And then in comes Tracy and says, "The hell you say?" And she comes in there and she saves the day, or she takes over. That was missing, damn it. I'm like,
well, and I'm not going to say that no General Hospital fan is excited to see Ethan, because Dan from Geek Confidential is ecstatic because he loved the character of Ethan. He's ecstatic for this.
He's also the one
who talks shit about Robin and loves Lisa Niles. So take it with a giant grain of salt. Me either. But all I'm saying is, there is no scenario in which the majority of General Hospital fandom cares to have Tracy the fucking Quartermain come back for a storyline that involves her husband's love child with Holly, her stray. There's no scenario. That is not the reason why we love Tracy. The reason why we love Tracy is she comes into that Quartermain mansion, whips everybody into shape, lets her dad have a heart attack, and steps over him. That's what we love about Tracy. We do not need Tracy to come in and save a fucking stray who there's no point in him being on this cast. We can't have Lulu and Lucky back.
You can't have Tracy step over Edward because he is dead.
Well, no, but, I'm so saying that's historically that's what she did.
Like, well, unless you dig him up, no. But
historically, yeah, that's what she did. We have Lucky and Lucy, Lucky and Lulu, who are arguably two of the most iconic children on that show. And they are MIA. They've been MIA. And we get Holly Stray. I am sorry. There are so many things that I enjoy about General Hospital. It's been my favorite soap of the year. But you go and bring this character back when Lulu and Lucky are missing. And you bring him back by using Tracy Quartermain, who is beloved by General Hospital fans, in a way in which most General Hospital fans don't care if she's involved. Like, if this was a storyline and it just stayed with Felicia and Holly, sure, fine. Yeah. Like, if Felicia had sold off some of her Aztec jewelry to save him, fine. I don't care. But when we have a soap that is bringing back Ethan instead of Lulu and Lucky, when we have a soap that's bringing back Cody Bell instead, or introducing Cody Bell instead of bringing Serena Baldwin back, there is a consistency and pattern in this show where they do not capitalize on the heritage characters that they have, and then they're misusing people like Tracy Quartermain. It made me so mad. I was spitting nails.
We're here, baby. Now, see, listen, memo to Dan and Chris. Memo or Chris and Dan? I don't know how you guys introduce yourselves, so that's why I'm going to keep this up. Memo! Now, look, y'all don't want Luke. You don't want Luke to go off on the rails on your ass. Just like, it's like you showing a little leg and then you taking it right back. You're being a tease. Tracy coming back to save Ethan. I was like, what? With all this going on, and I'm going to beat this drum until it is addressed. They've completely forgotten that Austin is a Quartermain. They also made peace with Austin. One would think, since Ned needs all the allies that he can get, because he's about to do a major takedown in ELQ, he would try to
bring... Well, because the stock is suffering, as he told us this last week.
Right! You would think he would try to bring all the cues back on, and then he thinks that he is about to get fucked, and here comes Tracy. What was the point of making Austin Jimmy Lee's boy if you're not going to do that? Tracy still has yet to address that. I would have
Tracy versus Austin would have been fantastic, and I'm not a fan of Austin.
Yes, I would have liked for Tracy, because Tracy did not like Jimmy Lee.
No!
She would not like Jimmy Lee Stray! So, Ethan? No, girl. But I will say this. It wasn't Peter August that she was bringing back.
Well, that's true. And another positive, both Holly and Felicia looked amazing.
Oh, thank you, Laura. Because, you know, Luke spoke him into existence last week, and it wasn't me. He was trying to ease it on.
I did not speak him into existence.
I said that
we have to be very specific when we talk about returning villains.
Not bringing him up, and then you did. He is like Candyman. Boy, do not bring him up no more. Josh, you heard what I said?
All I'm thinking about is don't stand in the mirror and say, Juilliard.
Don't bring it up.
I rebuke you. Toy. Luke, now, I thought about you this week, girl, because when they had that funky cat bitch Carly bring up to Nina. No, bring
to
up
Ava,
to
Ava. Why?
You know, I said, see, they speaking for Luke, girl.
And there still wasn't a good explanation. Carly was like, what reason do you have to be friends other than your hate for me? And, like, as much as I love Ava, that was not a good explanation.
Yeah, Josh. But I'm like, that was not Carly's lesson to teach.
Oh, no. Well,
it was not. And I am hoping that Nina is like, fuck this shit, and she decides to blow Carly up because...
Ooh, that looks like that's coming too, doesn't it?
It does, because it is really pissed. I'm not looking for funky ass Willow to be braiding Nina's hair, vice versa. But the fact that you are making Nina the villain in this story, when Carly, you put all of this ball of wax in motion,
Thank you.
To Michael plotting and scheming on you, Carly has to have comeuppance. And then to, like, I also saw that GH has a potential rivalry, and I think they're going to do it. Or maybe they are, and they're testing the waters. I'm like, I don't know. These two, Chris and Dan, Dan and Chris, I'm like, y'all are real slick. They have a potential rivalry. They remembered Christina Chow. They dug
Christina,
and she was talking to Dex. They have chemistry there. They have chemistry, and they had Christina throw Dex off when she starts talking about the initiative that she and Sonny are doing, and he looks a little conflicted. Y'all know I've been harping for Nina. Not Nina, Ava or Spencer to nail what Josh and Dex and Michael are doing. What if it's Christina? What if she finds out? I'm just sick and tired of them acting like Sonny doesn't have other kids. That it's all about Carly stray kids.
Not only that, but it would play into Alexis versus Carly from back in the day.
And I would love for Sonny's real kids to like blow that. Like I would love for Christina to just ether Michael. And for her to just check Josh. And it would be hot as fuck if they had Christina sleep with Dex. And she'd be like, "You nailed my dad. I nailed your man." Hell, she's fluid. Let her sleep with Willow, too. But I wouldn't want to wish that on her.
Oh, no, no. Ew.
I wouldn't want to wish that on her.
Willow's another one of those that can die. Let's just, like, let her die.
Should have been dead.
I mean, a long time ago.
I thought about you. I'm like, I thought about Luke. I was like, Michael's pretty much killed off a family. I'm like, you just got that poisonous
dick of death. It's just a dick of death.
Yeah.
Well, the dick of death. Well, that's a terrible joke. I'm not going to use that as a segue to Bo and Hope. Okay. Days of Our Lives. Hope came face to fancy face with Bo this last week. Josh, were you all up in your heart eye emojis?
I was in the last 14 milliseconds of Friday's episode. I thought they did a good job setting it up. I liked Harris and Bo making that deal, and think Steve Burton as Harris has chemistry with Christian Alfonso's Hope. There's some chemistry there. I like them together. I thought the scenes he had with Peter Reckle were good. All up in my feelings about that. Also all up in my feelings about we getting some peacock stuff. Did you see those boys up in those gray sweatpants on Friday?
No. And did you see the peekaboo boobs?
The peekaboo boobs.
I was going to say Nicole.
The shot way down low on Eric's torso. I was like, okay, now.
I was like, what is this?
We
what
got some this? Peacock. Peacock.
Okay.
Peacock.
I will give them this. They're not doing it gratuitously. Like, you know, one day you just see ass and titties just flapping all over the place. They're not doing that. So they're slowly leaning into that. So
ooh,
I'm
that
like,
shower scene was hot.
Yeah, it was.
It was really good. I loved the way they filmed
Steamy.
It. I loved the back and forth of both of them fantasizing.
Yeah.
And then the follow-up to me, Cole and Anna.
Anna
in that room. Ooh, that was so good. I think Anna, anytime Leanne Hunley's on my screen, I'm good. But her giving Nicole that advice and Nicole having someone to trust, I really liked it. And then Nicole brought up Sydney when she said, I couldn't trust you before because you sided against me. It was good history.
Bitch, that ain't what you see. And that made me tight because I'm like, you little heifer, that wasn't yours to do.
Oh, I know. I agree with you. That's history. That's exactly what happened, is that Nicole tried to find somebody to trust when she was trying to pull that fast one. And Anna sided with the Damaras and said, no, this is a Damara. I'm not doing that. But I liked all of it. But going back to the original prompt, Bo and Hope, we're going to get the full swing of it next week.
Preview. Oh my God.
I loved it. I thought it was great. There's lots of complaints about how the story has unfolded, but I actually really like it. I think, to be honest with you, the best scene of the week was between Peter Reckle and Mary Beth Evans. on Friday's episode when she finally almost gets through to him and his chin starts to quiver and his eyes start. She's like, when she explains that Caroline brought Beau home and gave him to Kayla and said, he's yours. And it was just Mary Beth Evans. If she does not get a lead actress Emmy nomination out of this.
Side note, Caroline, you just dumping your chair and your strays off on your other chair and
well,
you
wench. Well, because she knew that was Victor Spawn.
You wench.
there was something very wonderful about the sibling chemistry this last week.
I mean, Days was pretty good when those last moments. I enjoyed it. Chloe and Xander, they're so cute. When he slapped that biscuit out of her hand, I was like, girl, he slapped a Popeye's biscuit out of your hand. Them things are like, you need milk to drink with that. So I'm like,
and they are so good. They're good, but they're dry as fuck.
They're like, you can't drink that with no water or not. No, you
so,
need
but
milk.
But the reason the Popeye's biscuits are so good, but you have to cut them in half and then let the butter melt all over them.
Quiet as kept. You need to eat it from New Orleans. If you go to New Orleans, go to Popeye's there because it's like chef's kiss. But you need milk with that. So he saved that girl. Cause I'm like, them biscuits, like I'm like, girl, you eating that just by itself. You need it. Yeah, you needed your hand snack. Their little cuteness, it was so cute when he was just like, don't pull it out. He was like, do you want to throw another dart to even me out? I'm like, who said that? That was so funny. But I'm like, only Xander would think some shit like that. And he was like, I guess we're even since I kissed you. I'm like, they are so funny and they're so cute. And I mean, hot people need to be together. I mean, wait until they need to sleep together because it's going to be fire.
And she literally struck him with an arrow.
Yes, in his heart. Close to his heart. I'm like, okay, Ron, we see you.
Fire.
Yeah, it was like, it was a little chilly. It was, but it was cute, chilly. Whatever. But
they're fire.
Yeah, they were. But, my God. Like, here's the thing. I don't mind how this Beau and Hope thing is playing out because, let's just be real, people, if we got our faves back and they just come on and he's like, I remember your fancy face. You will be complaining about he's been in a cry.
There's no story. Where's the story? Yeah.
There's no drama. There is no drama. And you would be like, oh, he's been in that frozen test tube and ain't nothing wrong with him. It's like, damned if you do, damned if you don't. You need drama. Like, Hope's love is getting through to Beau. That's fucking epic. And it's kind of, ain't that like a little bit of history?
Yep.
Ain't that like a little bit of history? His love, what you yupping for? How is it like history?
No, Beau and Hope's connection has always been like this. And like Kayla, the way that they played this out, that Kayla was hammering a chisel to him and he's now vulnerable and right. Then Hope is going to send it home.
Right.
Yeah.
See, I like the fact that it's not just Hope's quote unquote love. Like, his sister is like driving that home. Like, boy, you are like, come on now. And with the history with them, you know, I don't know. The Days expert ain't here no more. But isn't it like, when she came back and she thought she was Princess Gina? I know she unlocked a puzzle that only Hope knew, but I thought like, Beau's love also got her.
We got Kayla hammering away and then Hope's gonna send it home. On that story, it was Alice Horton who was hammering it home like Kayla is now, and then Beau sent it on. So it's always family and love.
See? Yes, like I like it. And I like the fact that Beau wanted to lean into Victor's side of things. We never got to do that. Like the only time that Beau needed Victor was when shit was getting dicey and he needed like Victor's underworld connection. He needed a private jet. Like, I like that he's leaning into that. And now that, you know, John Aniston now gone to glory, child, like we need a little bit of that. So I ain't got a problem.
I agree.
And it can't always be easy because if it's easy, it's cheesy and it's boring. So
on that note, we'd encourage you to comment on this episode at daytimeconfidential.com. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/DC Confidential. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/DC Confidential. You can find me on Twitter at Luke_Kerr. Jillian is at Jillian Bo, and Josh is at Dr. Joshua. We thank you for listening. Until next time, so long.
Bye, y'all.
Later.